name, you know?
Fred Wilkinson.
And when did you start on out in the Central Circle Mining District?
When it was about 10 days old, my folks lived out there, and my, of course, mom had to go to Fairbanks for my birth, and then they released from the hospital pretty soon, but back then they didn't, usually a week in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I was about 10 days old when I came out there. Of course, I have no memory of it.
Yeah.
And then my folks moved outside after that, so we didn't come back till I was 11 going on 12.
Mm.
And then my dad went in partnerships with my uncle.
What was your uncle's name?
Franklin Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
So, but he had Hodgkin's disease, kind of terminal. He that year and next year, he was too sick to even make it, and he died that fall. So, and my dad was pretty much running it then.
What creek was he working on?
On Miller Creek.
Hmm.
So that's just on the other side of Eagle Summit.
Yeah.
You're descending the valley down there.
Yeah.
So,
how busy were things back in Father's Day?
It was a different culture. We had mail once a week. It was either Friday or Saturday night. It was also it was at the Miller House. It was kind of a gathering point for the miners to come down from the creeks and get mail, swap stories, tell about the things that go wrong. That part hasn't changed. In general, because then you didn't get visitors on the creek as much as you did now.
Mm. So you went out for the mail, is that what?
Yeah, the mail. Also, there was a freight delivery from Fairbanks once a week.
Mm.
Originally it was Oscar Bradley, and then it was, then the last one was Bob Casey.
Hmm.
I don't know if you know
him. No, I didn't know him.
Okay. And Slim Baxter was the one in between. And he got in an accident. It was a freak accident. He was apparently driving and his arm hanging out the window in the summertime, and someone clipped his arm, and that kind of destroyed his driving career.
That road was pretty bad in those days, too.
Oh, yeah. You could see it was twisty. It would make a turn to get 90 degrees to go over that ditch line. It was you can see corduroy coming through in places, narrow. But it was accepted because it was a connection.
Yeah, yeah. So how many were the people on Mammoth and Macedon and Miller at the same time?
Oh, yes, uh-huh. We were the only one. We owned all the claims on, I'll take it back. We didn't at that time. There was three claims along to Jack Anderson, patented. We bought them, my folks bought them later. And, but he was kind of unique. He had his claims patented. Also, his brother was ground on the Princess Sophia, and he took over that operation. And having seven claims patented there.
Oh, yeah.
So, Ed and Jenny Gelvin's place in Central was originally his home site.
Hmm.
So he was smart enough to do that. Nowadays, you can't hardly acquire land.
Hmm. Yeah. What kind of operations did the guys have?
We just had one bulldozer, the only mechanical equipment. We had two pumps, one was for stripping. Originally, we were somewhat down on the lower end of Miller Creek, and most of the pay was under a bench under black hole muck.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So you used hydraulic idea?
Yeah, for stripping.
Yeah.
And then tack and pushing into a sluice plate. Originally, the year we'd come there, my uncle had wings on a sluice box, and dozed in and washed in, and then people were changed. That was the first real developments. It was going to this hose play, and the first one we had was just some rough cut 2x12s with some flattened hydraulic pipe over it feeding in the box. And next winter my dad built one. And we, at that time we wintered in Seattle, had it, or north of Seattle, excuse me, had it shipped up. So, and that's, we use that the rest of the time. So,
was this in the 50s?
40s and 50s.
40s and 50s, huh?
Late 40s and 50s. 1948 was the first year we were there.
Was it a pretty good creek then, Miller Creek?
It had us good places. We had some good years and some bad years.
Mm.
So, the last few years, my dad did fairly good. And then, unfortunately, he run into going upstream. He always mined upstream. He run into old workings, and that's when he quit.
Mm-hmm. So. You've gone back, haven't you, though, to Miller Creek?
I'm planning on going back probably when this cuts down.
Yeah.
But I've got a lot of stuff to move back, so it's going to be a considerable time. Plus, so many... When you're on federal claims, there's so many government problems, I just want to get away from it.
Mm. So it's state claims on Miller Creek?
No. Well, I have upper claims for federal claims. Mostly worked out. They were my grandfather's. I'm holding them out of sentimental value. Mm. But the lower ground, I had patented. So I have the old three plus five. And it's going to be selective places here and there, but I'm 77. How much longer am I going to go?
Mm.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, then, talk about Miller House again. It was a gathering place, so
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You guys, and you sent your gold out on the mail or something?
Some of it did. My dad didn't. He usually took it out. That at the early days there was a U.S. Mint in Seattle, mm. And then after that closed, then it was shipped to San Francisco. Mm.
So,
the Mint in Seattle, they told my dad they would allow them in there. They told my dad that if you ever got your gold stolen, you know, you had to sell it to the U.S. government. Then, if anything was ever stolen, we were still practicing it. We could tell which any come in. We could tell which brick it come from.
Oh yeah.
So we just played.
Yeah. What was the fineness of your gold?
Miller Creek run probably 81 to 83%.
Yeah.
Most of the rest is silver, of course. Mm-hmm. A little bit of something else, which they never identify.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Creek's Circle District is kind of unique because it varies all over the place. Like, Eagle Creek is over 90%. Crooked Creek, where Stan is, it's below the Dentina Fault. I think it runs 85, 86, and above the fault, it's 80. And then clear down to Half Dollar Creek, and I've been told that's running about 68%. But most of them run around 80, roughly in the 80% range. Catch them high 77s usually.
Mm.
It's not a high assay creek, but it's not a low assay creek either.
So. Yeah. So, what did most people just have one bulldozer then?
Some of them had two. A few of them had drag lines. My dad was always going to get a drag line. He never made mm-hmm. the commitment
mm-hmm.
because that when you had a tailing something and the tracks in, you ate them out pretty quick. We had to buy a new set of tracks about every other year. So, just digging in that sump.
Wow.
So, you know, in the water and abrasion.
Yeah. Was it a cable lift or a hydraulic?
It was hydraulic, but it was what they call an Isaacson. It wasn't a Caterpillar. It was a D8. My uncle bought it new in 1947, the year before we come there. He had bought two dozers before, surplus from the Army, you know, probably on the Alcan or that, and traded them on a new one.
Mm-hmm.
It was still pretty primitive compared to today.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it had an Isaacson blade, hydraulic. Yeah. Cable blades just did not dig good.
Yeah. So, did you get to work on any equipment in those days?
Oh, yes, uh-huh. And drove it. The worst part of it, you had to grease all the rollers, which is, it was a semi, real sticky, semi-thin grease. You got it all over you. But it was every other day.
Mm.
My brother and I, we'd rock it up, clean the rollers, and grease them, and fill it up. So.
Did you learn mechanics in about that time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was things to do, but about every 2 years, not only that, but the seals on the final drives weren't real good. They had old bellow seals, and they would go out. So when we changed the tracks out, we'd go in each final drive too. So it was probably about a week of hard work. So
yeah.
But my dad, he didn't run the dozer much. The second year, he hired a friend of his for 2 years. My dad had a problem, severe hemorrhoids. He just couldn't take sitting and bouncing in the seat that long. About that time, my brother and I were about 14, 15. We'd each run it half a day. So,
mm-hmm.
And then the other half was breaking rocks in the sluice box.
Oh, yeah.
So, in between that, we was out in the cut, hammering, busting rocks up. So we get them, so they'd go through the sluice box.
Oh, yeah.
So,
how do you rake rocks?
Well, it was a shovel. You put it in, and the water was going so fast, the shovel would flare. Usually, your bottom end was wet, so it was semi-miserable. If it was a warm day, it was all right, but cold and towards fall, it wasn't much fun.
Yeah, plus mosquitoes in early summer, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And how mining has changed since then. So, and I, when I come back for myself in 68, or well, took over, my folks had a lease to somebody, had some problems with them, anyhow, but I took it. Never got sluice, I never paid no royalty to speak of. My folks, you know, he had it for no better than 10 years, and always an excuse. My folks just turned over to me in fall of 68. I come back there. He left a lot of the equipment right in the middle of the stream during that 67 flood, destroyed a bunch of stuff, and I had to rebuild the dozer. And I had bought another dozer, that was cable operated. So, and I pretty much worked by myself. In the interim years, I'd worked as equipment operator, both a number of years at coal mines at Haley, and also operating engineers, all, pretty much all over the northern and central part. So most of what I see in Alaska and the Circle areas, I've seen work in construction, not as tourists.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. So a lot of heavy equipment operator.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Do you do welding, too?
Yes. I don't call myself the best welder, but I do it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and diesel mechanics and,
yeah,
geez, everything. Then.
Yeah, you've got to be pretty universal to do everything.
Yeah. So.
And operator, and decision maker, and manage the books, try to make a profit,
mm-hmm.
So an expediter. And
yeah.
So my parents, my dad, like in the summer, would only go to town about once a summer. Of course, we had freight delivery, but not a lot. You were more self-reliant back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now with everything turned mechanical, you've got so many things that break down, so you're probably, I don't think I've ever gone over 2 weeks without having to go to Fairbanks for something or other. Mm.
So. That's pretty much shoots a whole day and or more.
Yeah. And something, a secondary reason, we grew up eating out of tin cans. And I could do without that, so I like more fresh stuff.
Yeah.
So we had, when we, back then, we had, they had no refrigeration, no power. We had, we'd get an order of meat, originally from Wechter Brothers, and then from Quality Meats package. And first day we'd have steaks, second day roasts, third day it was whatever made out of the was left. And then we was back on canned stuff, because that was about the limit of things go without spoilage.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Did you ever go to the hot springs much? Kind of a long ways.
I there's one summer, there are a couple summers in the late 70s, 80s. I had people working for me that were pretty good swimmers, and they insisted on going, so we went more.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved to Ketchum, the first few years, get a season pass and over there constantly. Then kind of wore thin and just didn't do it that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's after a long day's work, just want to relax. Of course,
yeah. Did you build a place in Central that you stay in now? Do you have a place around there somewhere?
No.
Do you have a place on your claims then? On Ketchum?
You don't own claims. You, right. Everything's got to be. Got to move out of there when you leave. So I tried for 20-something years. They've got a plotted subdivision on the Ketchum Creek Road. Can't get them to sell anything. So
yeah.
It's the state bureaucracy you're dealing with. It isn't that as a federal bureaucracy.
Yeah.
So I nominated land for sale. Now that I'm leaving, they'll probably put it up for sale.
Mm. So you deal with mostly federal regulations then for your claims?
Yeah.
They're federal claims.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you deal with Corps of Engineers and
yes. Mm-hmm. So far I have no real problems. But they give a jurisdiction over wetlands and anyhow. And I don't know really what they could be a problem, but they're not.
Yeah.
So it's mainly the BLM and water quality was the EPA. This year I switched to the state. But it's hard to, how would I say it, just because of seeps you can't control. I mean, you try your best, it bleeds in the creek and it don't take much. Mm-hmm. Personally, I like the old days. It was muddy while you sluiced. You shut down, an hour later everything was running clean.
Mm-hmm.
It was running clean until the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
They need the government.
You came through that time when they changed over to recycle ponds and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a big deal for you to do?
Well, on Ketchum, before they did, I still did it because Ketchum was such a low water creek. I moved there and it was Joe Vogler's ground. And he let me do the lease on the lower claim or two. And I stripped the lower fall of 84 and moved over there. I was trying to make payments for a big loan, and the last year I couldn't do it on Miller Creek. It's just, and I switched there and got my loan paid off. To buy some equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lower Ketchum was a good creek. And fortunately, I mined it all out.
Was that above the tertiary gravels then?
No, I was in granite.
You were in granite?
Granite was decomposed bedrock. It absolutely no pay in it. But just above it, there was kind of a sediment layer, and that was the best pay.
Mm. Was it much overburden to strip off?
Not a lot. It was difficult overburden. Mm. Sticky. Mm. Couldn't stack it type stuff.
Mm.
So you just kept at it.
So when you finished with Miller Creek, then you went over to Ketchum? Is that what happened?
Well, I didn't. That was, let's see, 84. I started on Miller. I seen I wasn't going to have a good enough ground to pay that loan off. And I had a little claim on Macedon Creek. And I moved over there and mined there. It was a bench claim, very good face pay. Unfortunately, didn't go into the bench very far. And Joe Vogler, I was kind of feeling sorry for myself that you know what Bernie Carl is, don't you? He was a miner back then. He had these hog feeds on lower gold dust. And I was there and Joe was there and I was kind of telling my problems. He says, well, why don't you try Ketchum Creek? And I was dumbfounded because there's so many people tried to get a lease from Joe. He would not listen to them.
Hmm.
And he didn't do much mining himself. And he'd go there for a few weeks, his claims on wood chopper for a few weeks, work on his roads in a subdivision for a few weeks.
Yeah, but he was generous to some people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and been there ever since, except we had a problem with the BLM later on over stuff. Joe wanted to, it was a, how would I say it? It's hard to explain, but there was three of us he had leases on at that time, and he ordered us all off the creek. That was just a year before he disappeared. And so I moved off and was going to do some mining on Upper Crooked Creek, way above where Stan's mining, above the Dentina Fault, and stripped some ground and started testing, got to bedrock and started testing. It was pretty poor. So I just put the stripping back over it. And that time, Joe's nephew Lynn, who I'm leasing from now, took over originally as a guardian of his estate, and then finally he inherited the property and went back on. So,
mm-hmm.
Ketchum.
So, you, how many miles have you worked on Ketchum then?
Well, it's been discontinuous. Before that, mm-hmm. I worked the right limit on the lower pines, which is real good, and switched to the left limit. It was lean, but I was doing all right. And then it started getting leaner and leaner, and pretty soon, nothing. So, mm-hmm. And then Lynn gave me a lease up above, and I mined there for somewhere around year 2000 to 2000. Finished up last year. Excuse me, the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then got delayed by the BLM. That road up there is an existing road, but it was too narrow, all grown in. And the somehow an existing road, I had to get a permit. And they said put it in 6 months ahead of time. Well, I was planning on starting that in, you know, latter part of 2011. And anyhow, permits weren't in. I mean, they weren't. And finally, November, which was too late, they okayed my permit, so it cost me a lot of time.
Wow.
And spent a good part of last summer developing it and putting that, widening that road out, ditching it, making it wide enough. My, you know, some of my, that trommel, it's about a 16-foot wide stance plus a little cushion too, you know.
Mm.
So anyhow, and didn't get a lot done this year for breakdowns. So anyhow, should be good to go next year.
How'd you handle that conveyor belt? Getting the old one off there and getting a new one. I mean, those look like a big. That conveyor belt must be a couple feet wide.
Oh, it's 48 inches or no, 60 inches wide. Excuse me.
And
I brought it into town and at this outfit. I had a, because of rock pounding, I couldn't use a, they have a mechanical splice, which wouldn't hold up. So I had
had a vulcanized spice put in it.
Mm.
And it was hard getting a hold of the people. They were busy. They do work for Fort Knox, Fogo Mine, and finally got them early summer and got it done, then loaded up and hauled it out, then had some problems with the truck. I got in late, and I was tired, and when I tried to lift it off the truck, I dumped it and damaged it. And I spent quite a bit of time rebuilding that.
Yeah.
So took a bad hit.
Moving it around, you had to use an excavator or something like that?
Well, the people below me got a new loader. Mm. With you can interchange bucket and forks. And I borrowed it, put the forks on. But I was just too tired. It was too late at night. I did something I shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
Should have waited the next morning, and I didn't. So.
Yeah. Well, since you mentioned your wash plant, can you describe your trauma?
Yes. On Millercreek, let's back up a little bit.
Sure.
For the first couple of years, I used my dad's sluice box. Then I decided to, and his cat, which was matched, I decided to get a D9. There was not nines used in mining back then. I was probably the first.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, D10s are common. But anyhow, there was no point doing that unless it'd be a bottleneck, not for sluicing. It'd just too much capacity. So I built a new sluice box. The old one was 32 inches wide. I built a one 64 inches wide. And on Millercreek, I just gunned the dirt through, moved a lot of dirt. And it did all right. When I went to catch them with no water and in a granite formation with a lot of boulders, wouldn't do. I run across, he was a scrap dealer in Redmond, Washington. He bought a whole bunch of used 8.9 inch diameter pipe that was surplus, I think it was from Weyerhaeuser. They had railroad tracks in it. It was a pressure vessel. I think it was 1,000 feet long. He bought some of it, and he was making boats out of it. I talked him out enough to build that trommel. And anyhow, had it built. We had it at the welding shop here in Fox. We started and finished up on the creek.
Mm.
But I don't know how I did it, because I hadn't cleared my debt. But I went in, I knew what I wanted. I designed it all on paper and had a good drafts lady draw it all up to press the bank. And that was the old First National Bank. And they went along and financed me, which I always appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that trauma worked out. I mean, over the years, we've made changes on it, but it's worked out. You know, it's 25 years old now. Most of the dredges put in this country were wore out in 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's done me a lot of good.
So how have you got it set up? You got a grizzly and a feed?
No.
No grizzly?
No grizzly. The grizzly's in the trommel. It's a two-stage. It goes through a washing area about, not quite 20 feet long. Which scrubs it and tumbles it. And then two-stage, on the end is long bars 2 inches apart.
Hmm.
So what drops through then goes on to the screen 3/4 inch diameter. Originally, I didn't have the screens on for a couple of years and did get two nuggets that would not have gone through, a 2 1/8 ounce nugget, which end up, Joe Vogler got it for Doris's wife, and it was a beautiful nugget. Then I got one was a good part of rock. I hung onto that. It was, I can't exactly remember, but it was less than 2 ounces. So, but mm-hmm. they would have gone through, but But when you go down to Three Quarter Inch, the fine gold recovery proves so much. As far as total value, you do better. You know, most of the dredges here in Fairbanks area just have half-inch openings, the old FE dredges. And that'd be, I don't know what, you know, some of the ground probably wasn't nugget ground, but some of it probably was, and there's probably nuggets in the tailing piles that'll never be discovered because they're probably too deep for a metal detector and too few.
So the diameter of your trommel is about 9 foot, maybe?
8 foot nine.
Yeah.
Then the screen sections beyond that, it's about 10 feet.
And then you got your conveyor that brings off the. What's the conveyor bring off? Everything?
Just the course.
Just the course. Yeah.
The fines go through the sluice box. I've experimented with sluice boxes over the years. Had some that originally I started out with the boxes that were in my old 64-inch one for a few years, then tried something they was doing in Canada. It was called a pulsating riffles. They had a rubber bed in the bottom of it. That didn't work. I was dumping gold pretty bad. Then I experimented with a traveling belt. The catching the riffles would pack. You had to clean up about every 4 days, which is a lot of time lost.
Yeah.
And then.
What packed them? Was it just the
mud?
The mud. Oh yes.
To be effective, a riffle's got to be loose. It packs up. It loses effectiveness. And then had a friend, a miner from Eureka. He kind of traveled a lot in the wintertime. It was New Zealand. And the first told us about these hydraulic riffles where they injected water. I've come back right in my shop here. We built three sets. One went to Yukon, which changed things over there, mine, and one for his operation in Eureka. And miners, they're pretty quick to catch on to stuff. They get pretty universal within a few years. They do a good job, so but you have to learn. So it's you never mining. If you close your mind to something, I know miners that wouldn't do it, and I closed my mind once to one thing. Back when I was on Miller Creek, at the lower end, very fine gold. I was losing a lot of it, and I tried something under my riffles that was upholstery fabric called hog's hair. Rubberized hog's hair. And it did somewhat, but the guy from the Bureau of Mines come back by and told about a miner somewhere else using AstroTurf. And I kind of just reject the idea because I didn't have it in my mind. I thought it was that green indoor outdoor carpeting, not the true AstroTurf. AstroTurf is the trademark of, let's see, trademark, I think it's Monsanto. And then also the 3M product, Nomad, which some of the miners call Miner's Moss, come along too, and they're both good for carpeting. So.
But you stayed with the hog's hair instead?
For several years.
Yeah.
I closed my mind then, didn't try something.
Yeah,
but I didn't know exactly what it was or even where to buy it then. So
in your riffles now, you have hydraulic riffles.
Most of them they'll use about 6 feet of hydraulic riffles and expanded metal below that. I've got 12 feet of hydraulic riffles and then about a 4 feet of expanded metal with carpet underneath it.
And your trommel is pretty high up too, so you get your gravels out of the way pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not having to come around and move stuff around.
Well, that conveyor is so I can push it downstream. If I was taken across my trommel, I have to push across stream. And you got your recirculation lines, plus when it narrows up, you just got no room.
Yeah.
It's turning, it basically is turning things 90 degrees. Originally, I had a 125-foot radial stacker on top of that, and it worked good down below where I had room up there for a conveyor that just, if you can't, like a regular conveyor, it'll develop a cone pile pretty fast, and then, but if you got a radial, you can walk mm-hmm. the tail around. And, mm-hmm. But the cone pile, you're always, it doesn't take long to build up to the conveyor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Yeah. And how does is your trommel on wheels? How does it move around?
Originally I started on skids.
Uh-huh.
It was so heavy, unless it was on hard bedrock, it would dig in. Mm-hmm. I'd have two pieces of equipment, one pushing and one pulling. And I got some scraper wheels and tires from K&K Recycling that were off Green Construction's old 641 scrapers that were there, and used them. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Easier.
So now it looks like you got three excavators. Plus your D10 or D9?
I got two D9s. My old one,
two
D4, and I bought one since. I've got three excavators, a front shovel.
Front shovel?
Mm-hmm. It's a 245 as well. I had stripping. I just couldn't put stack, so I'd haul it downstream. Bought a haul truck.
Oh, yeah.
And then use that to load it. And probably, I had to go to find that in Calgary, Alberta. Mm. There's not a lot around.
Mm.
Had it shipped up.
The haul truck?
No, the shovel.
The shovel, yeah.
The haul truck was here in Fairbanks. Yeah. It was originally, I don't know if originally, but it was from Valdez Creek. And then Fairbanks Sand and Gravel bought it, and I bought it off them. They was going to use it in their operation, and it didn't work out apparently. So it's not road legal. Uh-huh. It's just too wide.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's big. Well, so generally you put in like a long day, I expect, huh?
Yeah, not as long as I used to. I'm 77 now, but I'm still doing a lot more than an 8-hour work day, plus cooking breakfast and dinner on top of that. So, but I started out way back in Miller Creek by myself, and then the first person I hired was Stan Galvin one fall.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of problems, but we worked good together. He was trying to, he'd start his own mining operation. It didn't work out, and his cat was trapped back in there. He had to wait till winter to get it out. So he worked for me that fall, and then I started hiring people after that. So.
Stan told me you guys staked out Crooked Creek, and then he said, "Well, I'll take this section, and he'll take that section."
Well, no, it wasn't quite that way. The lower end of Porcupine Creek was open before it joined the Mammoth, and the Henry and Helen Warner owned it. I don't like to jump in and stake, so I'll ask people if it's not a problem. So I asked them, so I know where their lower end of their claim was, so I worked from there downstream and got almost to Bedrock Creek, staked all that. It was low grade, and I'd worked about a week doing all that, and I was pretty tired beating through the brush and all that. Stan come by and says, "You mind if I start staking below you?" I says, "Go ahead."
Mm-hmm.
And he, when he got across the fault, that was good ground. Now, mine's right at this price of gold. Mine's probably marginal. I got somebody leasing it. How good they do, I don't know. I just didn't. I had leased it a couple times and it just didn't pay.
Mm-hmm.
It, than price of gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like creeks are getting harder and harder to find because they've been worked over so many times.
It's like everything else. You know, back in the days, the old timers got everything that was by hand and pick and shovel, the good stuff. And the next generation come along was the hydraulic miners, and they did what they could with that. And then in the late 30s, the bulldozers come in, and they could mine. The problem with the hydraulic mining was not enough water. A lot of times they were down for a good part of the summer. Like this summer has been a good example. Not so much the dozers, but the pumps, ability to pump and recirculate.
Mm. So. And the pumps didn't come in until later also then, right?
Yeah, until modern diesel engines.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, because there are a lot of ditches and things for the hydraulic people. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are the kind of royalties that people are asking for now for their ground?
The general rule is 10% gross.
Uh-huh. So do you think you have enough ground to continue working for a while?
This would be it. Up above me, it chokes down to where it's too narrow for me to operate. But I'll take that one cut out. And Miller Creek, it's picking here. I know what's left. I know the creek pretty well. And also, there's unfortunately, it's federal. There's in the 30s, my uncle worked up way up the upper end of the creek, but left one claim. It's narrow, but it's very good. It's federal claims, but I'm thinking of using that truck and just. If I mine it, just haul it down on the padded ground.
Mm.
It's about I have to make a good road because it's about a three mile haul. It's good ground, but there's heavy, light brown mud, which I don't say you mine up there without getting in the creek. Haul it down, I've got room.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a few other good spots too, and some low grade ground. So I'm not worried of running out of ground. When I left there, I was deep in debt. I'm not now, so I can what happens, happens.
Yeah, yeah. So great. Good. Yeah. Well, I think that's still good. But that's a good story.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll stop this for now. And if you have something else...